Good evening, you are now in arena time. It is 7:43
from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
My name is Ryan S. Starrett. On Twitter, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for sincerely believe in Trey Donaldson as point guard two. Hopefully not point guard one, though. It's just me and a very special S tonight. It's basketball season, guys, so I have Shooty Hoops Will, Dr. McLaughlin, here with me. How's it going, Will?
Going well. About yourself?
You know, if we had been 2-0 this week, I'd be a little better. But, you know, we didn't lose a non-con game at home, so I'm always happy about that.
Beggars can't be choosers.
So. Yeah. Well, let's get right into it. We've got a lot of basketball to talk about. From last week, a lot of basketball for next week to talk about. First, let's hear your thoughts on Holiday Hoopsgiving as you spent all day, all four games in State Farm Arena. How'd you enjoy it?
I had a blast. That's a basketball fan's dream come true to go and be in an arena for 11 and a half hours and watch four basketball games. And I really enjoyed it. So for those that didn't follow Holiday Hoopsgiving, we had Tulane and Buffalo, which there may have been 500 people in there, including staff and security, when that game tipped off. It was very sparse.
When you were sitting down almost courtside, weren't you?
We were, yeah. So me and a friend of mine who's a Memphis fan, we made the trek down from Nashville Saturday morning with the intention of coming for all four games, and we accomplished that goal. But yeah, we sat down courtside pretty much just about mid court, not directly on the court, but right behind the court, mid court. So I mean, we had a really great seat to all the action.
Who was the best player you saw all day? Like, if you had to pick one, not necessarily the best, you know, basketball player, but like, what was the performance that stood out to you the most?
Well, the best performance that I saw on Saturday was in that second game between LSU and Wake Forest, and that second game was a battle between Tyree Appleby of Wake Forest, and the player I was most impressed with was KJ Williams. KJ Williams had 35 points and 9 rebounds. He was 7 of 9 from three and really got LSU back into a game where they were down 30-12 at one point. And then LSU won that game 72-70 on a bucket with 2 seconds left.
Definitely a great finish.
Yeah, it was a great finish. Closest game of the day. And then obviously we had Auburn-Memphis in the third game. We'll talk about that. And then the nightcap was Clemson and Loyola-Chicago. And, you know, Loyola is not the same team that we've grown accustomed to the last 3, 4, 5 years. But they put on a clinic against Clemson. They never let Clemson get close. Anytime that Clemson could get it with the 8 points, they would hit a three. And just they handled Clemson for 40 minutes. So really fun time. The only thing I'll say in a negative light of Holiday Hoopsgiving, because I don't want to say too much negative, because it was a great, great event, great day. Thoroughly enjoyed it. The security, all the people were really friendly at State Farm Arena. We were very impressed by that. My one gripe about Holiday Hoopsgiving is you have to find, if you want to keep this an event that happens every year and make money, they have to find a second anchor team to help, because Auburn cannot be the only anchor team in this field. There's a fifth game in this event, which is not until this Sunday, between Notre Dame and Georgia. And I'm not really sure why they did that one off like that, but they have got to find another anchor team to come and play in that event, because I think even for Auburn and Memphis, like the it was a decent crowd, but I don't even think it was, the State Farm is 50% full, and I'm including everything that wasn't closed off. I'm thinking about the full arena, but you really need a second big anchor team that's going to have a big fan base that's not too far away to make that event even better.
I mean, to your point, there's almost always a lot of football schools isn't the way to put it, but I mean, this year between Auburn, Clemson, LSU, it did kind of feel like that. But a lot of like B-level teams, I think, that there wasn't really the one Duke, UNC that you're like, oh, they're going to show up and put 8,000 people in there, or Kentucky, something like that. Yeah. Auburn is as close as they had to that. And Auburn-Memphis, you know, that is a good game to have on that schedule, but there wasn't much else as far as high-profile games around it.
Yeah, and you're never going to get a Duke, Carolina, or Kentucky probably to play in that game, but maybe like a Tennessee, maybe even throwing Georgia or Georgia Tech, I don't even know if that would be the draw that you need.
Well, a cool way to do it would be, and this is just me spitballing on the fly here, is if you could incorporate some of the SEC, ACC upcoming challenge to do some of that in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Have Georgia Tech be a part of that. Something to make it a rivalry, kind of have, you know, maybe two or three big names that would definitely show out there.
The only caveat or only thing I would disagree with that with is those SEC ACC challenge games starting next year. I'd love for those to be on campus.
To make more money, that would be a way they could approach it.
Sure.
They could steal some of those games, I think they definitely should.
No, for sure. If you want to do it where you play them in Atlanta one year, or even play them and then play them in like Greensboro or Charlotte closer to ACC country the next year, right, you could do that. Obviously with the SEC tournament pretty much in Nashville for the foreseeable future, you know, Atlanta didn't really have a big college basketball event until Holiday Hoopsgiving. And like I said, I enjoyed it, had a great experience. I think if you want to make it even better, you need to get a second big fan base close to Atlanta to make that, you know, that atmosphere even better. Because
right,
Saturday was a sweet home game for Auburn. Definitely had the most fans there and by a lot, obviously.
Right. Memphis traveled well. I was surprised and impressed. I mean, that was a fun neutral site environment. Like you said, I'd like that to be on campus, but we're always going to play some neutral site games. This was a fun one. It was a lot more lively than having Nebraska last year, which was just an Auburn game.
Yeah. Well, that, and they played that game at 11:30 a.m. in that first time slot. You made the Auburn-Memphis game the primetime time slot, which was the third game. And the other thing that they did, which maybe some other people didn't like this, but I loved it, is they only charged you for one session. They didn't split the sessions up, and you didn't have to buy two sets of tickets and go to one session, leave the arena, come back in. Like, you bought a ticket and it was for all four games. So, you know.
And I think seeing the slate, they knew they kind of had to do that. Try and encourage those Auburn and Memphis fans to get there early, stay late. And some did. I mean, you were there all day. So the people I was with, we showed up around halftime of the LSU game and stayed for about the first half of the Clemson game. So, I mean, we spent 4 or 5 hours there.
I think if Auburn would have won, I think more would have stayed. But
exactly.
So,
let's get into the game a little bit more specifically. Not the one we want to talk about the most, but worthwhile. I think we learned a lot about this team during this game. We also learned that Kendrick Davis is a really, really, really good basketball player. 27-9-6 for him in 38 minutes, which that's a lot of minutes, especially this early in the season. But, you know, we couldn't stop him.
You know, he came into this game, he had like a couple really bad shooting games. He had like a 4-for-18 game, 5-for-17, and he got thrown out of the previous game. And this just felt like a game where he was going to bounce back and show why he was one of the most sought after transfers in the market last year, because he played at SMU and he ended up, you know, staying in the American Conference. But one thing that my friend that's a Memphis fan, he actually was sitting close to the court, and one thing he mentioned, and he said that, you know, when Katie Johnson came into that game, he and Kendrick were jawing back and forth at each other. And I don't know if that kind of sparked Kendrick or not. I mean, it's Katie being Katie, and
you know what you're getting, Katie.
That kind of got him going, you know. So
right. If we win that game, we all talk about that as, oh, KD got in his head.
Yeah.
You know, when in the St. Louis game, KD and Dylan getting at Yuri Collins early was a big reason we won that game. So
yeah,
it is what it is. A lot of other people had bad performances besides KD. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't want to single him out. It was just an observation from a Kendrick Davis perspective. Yeah. But because quite frankly, from an offensive perspective, he was probably the best guy we had. You know, he did take 15 shots on Saturday, and nobody else took more than 9. But when Auburn needed a bucket, it felt like KD was like the one guy that could get one. Him and Chris Moore which
I have been loving Chris Moore this season.
Oh, I have too.
I mean, he has really come into exactly what we needed him to be. And that's not that he's a superstar by any means, but he's shooting well. He's playing good defense. He plays the ball in the air better than almost anybody I've seen. Like he looks like a stud wide receiver high pointing the ball. Like on some of these inbounds, I've noticed especially, he doesn't get beat very often on those.
No, he doesn't. No, like him and Jalen both. I think maybe I'm mixing games up, but I feel like Jalen had about three or four times where Memphis tried to inbound the ball and he knocked the ball away. And so, him and Jalen are really good at that. And you know, we'll talk more about Jalen in a little bit with the Georgia State game.
Jalen Williams, QB1.
Well, Jalen Williams fan account's very happy with what he saw last night. I'm sure. But getting back to Memphis, like it felt like, you know, Memphis, I mean, all credit to Memphis in this game. Like they outplayed Auburn. I really feel strongly about that. They exposed Auburn in the sense that it felt like they decided to speed the game up and kind of beat Auburn at its own game. You know, for the last several years, we've seen Auburn play, you know, up tempo really fast, try to wear you out. And it felt like Memphis, with the experience that they had, which they have 10 seniors on that roster. You know,
yeah, that's something we talked about last week. Those 10 seniors were going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, you know they sped up. You know they went down and they'd score basket. You know, quick bucket after quick bucket, and there was a point that Memphis made like 9-10 shots in a row midway through the second half to kind of separate themselves. You know, where they built like a 15-point lead. The other thing I want to call out too is, you know, Auburn's been really good at blocking shots this year. They didn't block their first shot until there was 3:26 left in the game.
I don't know if you picked up on this in the arena, but at State Farm, they've got like all the stat totals for each team in the corners on screens. And yeah, you see each player's line, and at the bottom, they have team leaders for all the different stats. For 30, 35 minutes in this game, obviously Auburn didn't have a block. Did you notice who the block leader was listed as?
I did. I definitely did.
One Jalen Harper.
Yeah. I was gonna.
You led the team with zero blocks for a long time.
I was gonna coin it as a name that Auburn fans have come to know and love, the brother of, obviously. Auburn only blocked two shots in this game, and they were like within like a 13-second span.
And they were late in the game too.
Yeah, within the last 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Auburn and the other thing I want to mention too from a defensive perspective is, you know, once again Auburn got out rebounded. They were -11 on the boards.
It was brutal for a while. I think it was -16 in the first half. So they kind of corrected it, but they were getting just slammed early on.
You know, and one thing I want to mention too is, you know, he's not here this year. But you know, say what you want about his three-point shooting last year. It was a struggle, but Auburn really misses Devin Cambridge's rebounding right now. You know, he may have not made a lot of shots, but he was certainly an outstanding rebounder. And, you know, looking at what Devin's done at Arizona State, you know, routinely he's putting up 7, 8, 9, 10 rebound performances. And it's like, man, it'd be nice to have somebody right now that could rebound. Cause that's as great as Auburn is as a defensive team, as great as they are at blocking shots, the one thing that they don't do well is rebound the basketball.
Yep. I think the big thing they're missing right now is Janiah Broome is clearly not healthy.
Yeah.
Healthy enough to play and healthy enough to put up okay stat line. I mean, he was 11 of 6 on 9 shots in this game. In a vacuum, that's not bad. But he struggled to go up with anybody. Didn't have any blocks in this one, obviously, but just didn't look comfortable putting himself in the right position, being able to jump and just high point the ball. We've noticed it for a few weeks now. I mean, obviously, he got hurt early in the season and played through it, but I'm hoping that's something he can get some rest on. I don't really know that's actually going to happen. But we need him to be fully healthy in conference play because it's been very clear he's been missing something. Despite, you know, like I said, not playing super poorly, he's just not been what we expected.
I just think when you have to replace a guy like Walker Kessler
that's very
at that fair. Spot, it's borderline unfair expectation. And seeing what Walker's doing in the NBA right now,
yeah, just right off college.
Really, really great numbers in the NBA with the Jazz. But, you know, I think that, you know, obviously the expectation for him was very high, and he hurt his ankle right at the start of the season and really haven't seen much, you know, much of what we saw at Morehead State. I will say this, you know, jumping ahead to the Georgia State game. Toward the end of Georgia State, he had two or three buckets where I saw a little bit of glimpses of, okay, this is what Jani can be.
And that's the thing. There's flashes where there's, you know, a five-minute stretch where it's like, oh, man, he is just getting to the bucket. He's staying in front of guys. He's running in transition. But in the first half of that game at Georgia State, he tweaked his ankle, and it bothered him for the rest of the half.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I clearly see what's there. His moves to the basket are fantastic, but it's just clear that he doesn't, whether he's not jumping as well as he was, or it's just the pain's bothering him as he's closing in. I don't know. I don't really want to speculate on what exactly is bothering him, but we need him. He's leading the team in usage right now. Clearly the plan is to get him the ball a lot. We just need him to convert. So,
and he's still, I mean, despite that, he's still averaging like three blocks a game. Like, he's leading that.
Yeah, and that's what's killing me. It's his stats aren't awful by any means. But it's just clear. It's like, man, we saw his tape, obviously, against, you know, mid-major teams, but I don't know. It's very clear what he can be. And I hope he's able to recognize that and get to that point this year.
You know, and last year, you know, Auburn had a guy, you know, if you need a bucket, you know, Jabari was that guy. He could always get you that bucket. Auburn doesn't have that this year, at least not yet. Not saying that we won't at some point, but I haven't seen it yet. And the other thing I'll say, too, is, you know, it was probably for the best, just considering what we've seen so far from Auburn this year, that Auburn's non-conference schedule, yeah, they played some teams, you know, mid-major teams that are usually really good. But they haven't really played a lot of, you know, if I'm throwing Auburn's versus Alabama's schedule, you know, there's no
not comparison. Exactly the same.
Yeah,
I mean, if I remember correctly, Alabama's schedule is way hard.
I mean, they.
What I do feel good about is that this Auburn team, with the defense that it has and the experience that it has, I don't feel like they're likely to get upset in the first round. You know, if they're a 5 seed and they play a 12, that's not the 5-12 game I would expect Auburn, or I would expect to be the upset.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, realistically, I think looking at what Auburn's, you know, capable of doing, if they can put all the pieces together, you know, Auburn's still going to be a tournament team. I think right now, I mean, I don't know if I think a 5 seed's doable. I think I see them more right now as a 6, 7, 8 seed.
It all comes down to conference play. I mean, if this team gets healthy and is, all you know, all it takes is a hot month, 6 weeks, and you're a top 10 team and you're a top 5 team. And all of a sudden it's, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah, we saw this last year. I mean, look who the toast of college basketball is right now. Look on the other side of the state. They're the toast of college basketball. They went to Houston and won. They beat Memphis this week. They play Gonzaga Saturday.
Look at North Carolina last year and then this year.
Yeah,
they were bad at non-con, and then they went on a crazy run, and now they're bad at non-conference play again.
Yeah. It's almost like we shouldn't, you know, it's almost like they had pretty much the same players come back from a team that was on the bubble until the last week of the season.
Right.
So, you know, and, you know, you don't want to get hot. I mean, you don't want to get hot. I mean, it's great to be hot right now, but, you know, it's better to peak in March than it is December, January, which Auburn peaked in late January last year. February was kind of, you know, up and down. But, you know, like we saw in 2019, Auburn got hot in March. They got them all the way to the Final Four. Not saying this is going to happen for this team, but, you know, it's good to get through, work through, hopefully get everybody healthy and, you know, see what happens in the SEC play. So last thing I want to say about this Memphis game is, you know, Auburn did have a chance to make a pretty impressive comeback toward the end of the game. You know, Auburn had got it down to 8 points. And they had three possessions where they could have, you know, got it within 5 or 6. And who knows what would have happened. You know, there was a turnover. There was an offensive foul on Wendell. And then the Chris Moore missed the layup, and BP went nuclear and got teed up. And that was pretty much the end of the threat. And, you know, people were mad, upset about it. I thought, you know, honestly, I thought both the last two calls were were fair to a degree. I think
that was the funniest thing, is the one he got teed up on was probably the best no call of the game.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, like, they called a boatload of fouls in the first 10 minutes to the point you're like, oh man, everybody's going to foul out of this game. Auburn's got good depth. Maybe there's something there. And then all of a sudden it just stopped. And then early, I think in the first 10 minutes of the second half, there were three fouls. And it's like, well, I mean, there goes any shot of getting anybody to foul out.
Yeah. So, no, there wasn't. There wasn't.
It was just strange. Not, I don't think it was biased. It was just strangely officiated, as we talk about every week. But
yeah.
But yeah, the one on Chris Moore, I mean, that was probably a good no call.
The only thing I could see from that, going back and looking at it, is Kendrick Davis kind of got his foot up, but I don't even think he touched him at all. But I think between, you know, some of the inconsistencies and this and that, BP just, he had enough. He was frustrated, and I mean, I thought maybe BP should have gotten teed up, you know, halfway through the second half, maybe to spark the team or not. But yeah. I think that was just frustration blowing over at that point. But again,
I don't think the halftime speech was too lovey-dovey either.
No, I don't think it was.
Those guys coming out of the locker room did not look too happy.
But let's be clear here. Officiating is not why Auburn lost this game.
No, Auburn lost because they couldn't shoot.
I just want to make that very clear. I don't want anybody to sit here and think that I'm blaming officiating for a loss, because I'm not doing that.
Just looking at the effective field goal percentage, it was almost 10% higher for Memphis. That's the game. Very, very, very rarely will you ever win a game when they outshoot you by that much.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's all it really was to that. Memphis is a good team. They played Alabama really well in midweek. So, you know, look for them to look good in March this year.
They need Auburn. They need Auburn to win, because, you know, that's their marquee win. And, you know, that Memphis-Alabama game Tuesday night, they lost by three. And if they would have – and Kendrick Davis had like 30 points in that game. But if they would have not waited until literally the last second of the game to hit their first three and only three of the game, or maybe it was a neutral floor, who knows? Memphis might have beat them too. So they're actually in the midst of three SEC games in a row. And Saturday will be their fifth SEC game. They played Vanderbilt in the opener. I saw them here in Nashville in the opener. They played Ole Miss, beat Ole Miss, beat Auburn, lost to Alabama, and then they played Texas A&M in Memphis on Saturday evening. So they have a very SEC-heavy non-conference schedule this year.
Yeah. I mean, they theoretically, they might not finish last in the SEC with three wins, maybe four.
For sure.
Let's move on to the Georgia State game. For a while, even scarier, and then a good ending.
Well, that's debatable.
Well, injuries aside, you got the win. You got out of there. Keeping your home streak alive. 20-point favorites. You'd like to win by at least double digits. Only ended up winning by eight. Auburn didn't do a great job putting this game away. Had between like a 6 and 10-point lead for most of the last 5-8 minutes. And just kind of kept Georgia State at arm's length there. There were some bad things. Obviously, the shooting was still bad. I think there was a little bit of gloom and doom at halftime. I think Auburn made six shots from the field in the first half. That's it.
I think 12 free throws. Yeah.
Yeah. Without the free throws, especially early, Auburn would have been run out of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia State had two free throws at halftime, and Auburn had a lot more than that. I don't know if you have the number.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but it was a lot.
I want to say it was like 17 or 18 free throw attempts in the first half to two.
Yeah.
They rallied. They got the win. It was good to see, especially being a man down without Katie Johnson, that they were able to take care of business. And obviously there's a lot of rumors around KD. Bruce left it at it was the coach's decision, and I think that's all we're going to do as well. I don't know what thoughts you have on any of this, Will, but fire away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to speculate on anything about that. It was coach's decision, and he's expected to play on Sunday against USC, so we'll see.
If he was at the game, engaged with his teammates, I mean, it wasn't like he was barred from the arena by anything.
Yeah,
like that.
I mean, he was on the bench. He was wearing a Sweet 16 shirt.
Yeah, I can't figure that out, because – Auburn went to the Sweet 16 his junior year of high school, if I counted correctly. So that means somebody just had that laying around and told him to put it on.
And yeah, because he was in uniform other than he just, you know.
Yeah, he had his shorts and shoes on.
Yeah.
And he was warming up, so I thought he might have his jersey on under that, and then he just didn't play.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was strange, but like I said, he was celebrating with all his teammates. He was having a good time on the bench. So,
as we all expect to know and love KD for. So, that's good. So, again, looking forward to seeing him back Sunday, but that's all I'll say about that. My thoughts on Georgia State is, you know, I'll be honest, like I didn't feel the energy. It felt flat. I don't know.
It was very flat early.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if it was because KD wasn't playing, but it felt really flat in this game for about 26, 27 minutes.
Yep.
Even early in the second half, it just didn't, like, the energy just didn't seem to be there. I know, it's kind of like, who's going to step up for Auburn and who's going to be the guy to kind of take over this game? And Jalen Williams,
he sure did.
I have been a big Jalen Williams fan for the last 3 years, and I wish Jalen would be more selfish. I really do, because he's that good when he's on. Yes. And when he's within 10 feet and he's got that hook shot, you know, going, it's almost automatic. And, you know, he put
up 20. Guys keep dogging on his jump shot. Or he was 2 of 3 from deep in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's I want to say he's around 40% for the year at this point.
Yeah.
39. Yeah.
Yeah, right on it. So he had 28 rebounds, and he blocked 3 shots, which, you know, after not blocking but 2 shots against Memphis, yeah. Auburn had 11 blocks against Georgia State in the midweek game. But it just felt like, you know, Auburn was down, I think, 6 early in the second half. I think it was 36-30.
It was, and 6 at halftime as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think Jalen hit a 3. And then it just seemed like every time Auburn needed a bucket, Jalen was kind of stepping into that role of getting Auburn the bucket that they needed.
Yep.
And then, hello, Trey Donaldson. Here's your Auburn moment.
He was is definitely what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, same.
Just without KD, Chance Westry gets moved from the backup point guard to playing more at the 2. He got only 8 minutes in this game, partially because Zep played a lot, and also Trey Donaldson was that good. You know, between Trey and Wendell, they had almost 50 minutes, so 10 minutes with them on the court together.
Chance is having a rough go right now.
And that's okay. We have been spoiled by freshmen ever since Isaac's freshman year, I guess. But even before that, I mean, Austin Wiley's a freshman, was really good. Mustafa Heron's a freshman, was really good.
Yeah.
And that's okay that Chance is just not ready yet.
Yeah. I think the injury has a role in that too.
I think that's part of it. I think it's part of what Bruce said a couple weeks ago. He's had to move him around a lot because he's not sure what his roster is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not fair to Chance, but it is what it is. Hopefully what we saw in this game will settle some roles.
Yeah. I mean, he's had
Trey Donaldson's PG too. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. You know, I think, you know, Chance has been, you know, bounced around between the 1, the 2, and even the 3. And I think you and I would both agree. I feel like the 2 is probably where he needs to end up long term. You know, and then the thing with the other, you know, while we're talking freshmen, you know, Treyor's still trying to find his, you know, his role on this team too. It helps that you're playing behind Jalen and, you know, Broom and Dylan, you know, trying to learn
you know, and Chris Moore playing some 4 the last couple games.
So I mean, we're gonna need these guys to step up, and you know, I'm hopeful that they'll do that. And once we get an SEC play, we'll see more of them. But I mean, that's the thing with non-conference play. You know, you've seen some of the up and down play. You know, BP's been trying to tinker with these lineups and tinker with these rotations and try to figure out who can play where and what situation do you put certain guys out there. And yeah, there's been moments where it's just been like, what the heck is going on? But you know, you don't learn until you don't get out there and get, you know, it's like having a job or starting a new job and you don't know what you're doing. The best way you learn is on the job training. You know, it's like for these guys right here, they're learning, you know, on the spot here while they're playing in games. So, you know, like you said, Ryan, we've been spoiled with freshmen,
yeah.
And you know, thankfully, you know, we've had, you know, some other guys have been able to step up in roles that, you know, they took a step back last year. Jalen's a perfect example. Jalen took a step back last year for Jabari. And Jabari, you know, obviously is playing, you know, playing in the NBA now. And Jalen, you know, took that, accepted it, played, you know, played well in his role last year. And now he's getting an opportunity to have, you know, a solid season so far. And really, you know, I want Jalen to be more selfish, quite frankly, because he can put up 15, 20 points a game if he really wants to.
For sure. I mean, Jalen in usage rate, which really usage rate is just the percentage of possessions that ends with that player. So if you have five guys on the court at a time, 20% is average. Jani Broome leading the team at almost 30%. Usually your point guards are a little bit higher. Wendell's at 26, KD's at 27. Jalen is just at 20%. He is the baseline average. He's been our most efficient scorer this year.
Yeah.
It needs to be higher, frankly.
Yeah.
But I, you know, if I see that and you see that, I guarantee you the coaching staff sees that as well. I don't have any concern about him continuing to be the focal point going forward. He's earned it.
And I'm not going to say he's going to have a Chumo Kiki-like season, like, he, you know, but he's got the potential, you know, because we all thought Chuma, it's like, Chuma, you're really good. Like, be more selfish. And, you know, we saw that and he ended up being a first-round pick.
Right.
So,
Jalen, he does so much well. It's offense, it's defense. I mean, like you said, when you needed a bucket, he could score from almost anywhere in this game.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen every night. He's not going to have, you know, just the perfect feel in the jump shot every single night. But it's good to see that when he was feeling it, they knew to go to him. He led the team in shots. 20 points. That's what we needed.
Yeah.
And then Trey Donaldson, like you were talking about before, I mean, not a huge stat night, but, I mean, in 20 minutes, 19 minutes, 6 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and just 1 turnover. Massive.
And he was that energy guy. He kind of filled that void that, you know, KD coming off the bench usually provides the energy. You know, Trey's the one that really provided that energy and kind of in that spark, kind of in that 12-minute range where Auburn really kind of went on the run that put him ahead for good. You know, Trey played a big role in that.
The easy narrative is that he plays like a football player, like a defensive back that likes to hit. But it's true. I mean, he, you know, picked up a couple fouls he didn't need to pick up, and he'll learn on that. He's a freshman.
Yeah.
But
they were jumping into him.
Yeah, but you got to learn how not to get that foul call.
Like I was saying earlier.
Yep. He was going through guys, getting to the basket, playing tough defense, not afraid to body up with somebody. It was great to see, even though he's still a smaller point guard. The comp that, you know, if I'm thinking about in recent Auburn point guards was Javon. He might not be the silky smoothiest guy out there handling the ball, but you're going to work guarding him.
And y'all remember Javon, his first year at Auburn. It was a rough go for most of it. Toward the end of the year, he really started to figure it out. And then
he saved that in Mexico State game in the first round.
He saved us. He definitely. And the Missouri game in the SEC tournament, that first game, he was the one that kind of carried us for a while. But, it was great to see, you know, because Trey had only played like 12 minutes since the beginning of the Bradley game, the Cancun Challenge. And then, you know, he didn't play against St. Louis, didn't play against Memphis. And, you know, for him,
it shows a lot of maturity for him to stay locked in like that.
Yeah, no, it says a lot about him and staying ready and being ready for his opportunity. And, you know, because of that, you know, he's got a chance to, for more reasons than just that, obviously, to have a lot more of an impact.
So we'll, at the end of this game, Wendell Green goes down after having like a pretty good surge in the second half. Little Jared Harper impression, getting to the line 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
But late in the game, just as Auburn is about to kind of, you know, put this one away, they're up, I think, 8 or 9 at this point with a minute or two left.
8.
He goes down. I didn't see the replay. I don't know if he twisted his ankle or landed on somebody or what.
So he had missed 2 free throws. It was 69-61, last minute of the game. comes down and I think it was Tucker that laid the ball in for Georgia State. And like he didn't try to foul. He was just literally just standing there. He was kind of an innocent bystander. And one of the Georgia State players kind of ran in and kind of stepped on his ankle, and it turned. From what I could see on the replay, really what happened. He was literally just standing there when he, you know, because he didn't want to, because obviously in that situation you didn't want to foul. So you know, they let Georgia State have that bucket. And then it, just kind of standing there.
His immediate reaction made me not worried about it. Like I was on the other end of the court. I thought he may have been cramping up or something because he was just kind of sitting on the ground trying to hold his feet, maybe to pull his toes a little bit. But then you go into the timeout, trainers go out. Yeah, you see him take his shoe off and kind of help him limp off the court. Not ideal. Bruce today said he's going to travel out to L.A. this weekend and might play, unclear. My unprofessional opinion is that these next two games are the least important two games left on the schedule. And you've got two guys who are competing for the backup point guard spot. Maybe let them go head to head. But, you know, coaches are going to make the best decision for the guys. So we'll see.
I have a feeling that he'll give it a go Sunday. We'll see how effective he is. I mean, it may not be able to play much or be as effective, but the thing with Auburn that I've kind of noticed, you know, so far this year is Auburn goes as Wendell Green goes, in my opinion. And when Wendell's off a bit, Auburn has really struggled. Going back to Memphis, I don't think he played his best game against Memphis, and he was only 3-9 from the field yesterday. He got his points at the three throw line. He made 11 of those 15 three throws, but I really feel like this Auburn team is going to go this year as Wendell goes. So if Wendell's out for any significant amount of time, that's not great. But like you said, you know, you've got these two games on the West Coast here where it's an opportunity for Donaldson, Chance. You know, maybe you throw Zep back. I'm just spitballing here. But, you know, it's kind of point guard by committee. But, you know, this Auburn team, they've got to have an effective point guard because we've seen what Auburn teams look like when they don't have a point guard. And trust me, we don't want to go down that road again for a very long time.
I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts about this one, about the Georgia State game?
I think we've kind of talked enough about it. So yeah. I know we've got a couple more games to look forward to here.
Last shout out, Janai Broom got honored with a little presentation for his 1,000th career point, which he had in the last home game. And then Wendell Green right behind him scored his 1,000th in this one. So 2,000 point scorers. Hopefully they'll be around to score some 100 more.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's get on to the last game coming up, the last game before Christmas. Auburn at Washington for the first time ever.
In Seattle. They've played.
Yes.
They've played once. Oh. Come on, Ryan.
Sorry. What I meant by the first time ever, and I'm going to cop out here, for the first time ever, Auburn is playing a game in the state of Washington.
Good save.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. Definitely.
All right. I remember didn't you have like a trivia show earlier this year where it's like Auburn hasn't. Yeah, you should know this. Come on, Ryan.
And I should have had you and James on here. It would have been a lot more fun. if you actually tried.
We love you, Carl.
I said it. And Ferguson Painter.
Ferguson Painter. We love you, golf.
The Observer don't know ball.
Oh gosh. No, a lot more ball than me, let me tell you. I will admit that immediately. But yeah, so for just kind of looking at Washington, so yeah, like you said, first game ever in Washington, first game in Seattle, obviously. This is a game that Pac-12 Network, get the streams up and running, because otherwise not a lot of people are gonna get to see it, which it's really a shame because this was a game I think a lot of people were looking forward to. You know, for Washington, it's their big non-conference home game, and they put it on the Pac-12 Network. And, you know, only a few people can get the Pac-12 Network, like 12 people get the Pac-12 Network maybe.
It's so funny because I only know of one way to get Pac-12, and it's the satellite we use for our tailgate gets Pac-12 Network.
Yeah.
Don't know why, but we found out watching like a one of the night games we had this year, we turned on a Pac-12 game like 3 o'clock to watch Bo Nix. We may fire up the tailgate next Wednesday night to watch this game.
Yeah, get the white tents out there. Yeah, that'd be tight. That makes some money that way. Auburn have a little watch party. So as we mentioned earlier, Auburn's played Washington once. This is technically the back end of a home-and-home series. It's been delayed.
5 years later?
Do what now?
Is it 5 years later? Is this the Final Four team or the SEC tournament team?
No, this was the Final Four team that we played. Okay. So we played them in 2018, 2019. I think we were supposed to come back the following year. I don't remember exactly what happened off the top of my head, but that got moved back to a year. Then COVID. So obviously that didn't happen. And then it wasn't on the schedule last year, I think partially because of COVID. So honestly, I didn't think we were going to ever play this game, which I was looking forward to. So I was really happy over the summer when they announced that they're going to return the trip to Washington. So nice of Auburn to finally return the trip to Washington. But in that first game that Auburn played, and there's nobody on either roster, but just kind of a recap for folks, you know, Auburn won that game 88-66. It was the second game of the year. It was the opening Friday night of college basketball season. And you may or may not remember, it was the first time that Auburn had played a top 25 team while ranked in the top 25 in Auburn Arena's history. Auburn was ranked 11th. Washington was ranked 25th. It was supposed to be a really high-profile, big-time game, and Auburn blew their socks off from the word go, and Washington never recovered. And Auburn was 12 of 31 from three in that game. I'll take six threes in this game. I'd be thrilled with six. And we saw what Chuma Okeke can be in that game. He had a 19-10 game, and Samir had 18. So just a little quick recap of that game. That was a dominant performance from start to finish from Auburn. And that was kind of the night I was like, well, we've got a really – I knew we had a good team that year, but, man, we showed a lot of potential in that game. As far as the current Washington – go ahead, Ryan.
Who was the guy, on Washington's team that year that was ended up being a draft pick?
Jalen Noel, maybe. Matisse Thybul.
Yes, Thybul.
Matisse Thybul was the guy drafted by the Sixers, I believe. So, yeah, they had some talent on that team for sure. As far as this year's Washington team, they are 8-3. They were 1-1 and I'm surprised I got this far without mentioning Conference of Champions, because this is Conference of Champions road trip, and you'll hear Conference of Champions a lot on the broadcast Sunday. But they have lost to Cal Baptist. They have a 1-point loss at Oregon State, and then they lost at Gonzaga. I believe Cal Baptist. I'm thinking of another school. Disregard. We'll keep going.
Oregon State, by the way, number 228 in KenPom.
Yeah. Yikes. Well, the same Oregon State team that gave Duke all they could handle in Portland in the PK85. This Washington.
Oregon State has 4 wins this year. Obviously, the Washington game. They've also beaten number 194 Tulsa, a D2, I guess, Bushnell team, and number 359 Florida A&M. That's it.
Yikes. Yeah, remember that Oregon State team that went to the Elite Eight 2 years ago, and then they won like 3 games last year? Yeah, that team.
Yeah. It's weird out west, man.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. So Pac-12 after dark, man. So this team averages 69.5 a game, allows 65.5. They shoot 32% from three. Their leading scorer is a name that Auburn fans are probably familiar with, because he played at the school that everybody came to see Auburn play back on January 22nd, the Kentucky Wildcats. Yes, I'm talking about Keon Brooks, former Kentucky Wildcat, averaging 17.8 a game, 6.3 rebounds, coming off a game where he had 30 points against Cal Poly. Which they needed all that to narrowly defeat Cal Poly, by the way. But yeah, Keon Brooks is their go-to guy. I was trying to coin the Kentucky thing a lot better than I did, but it didn't happen, alas.
We all know what you meant.
We all knew. I think y'all were picking up what I was putting down. The next player, Cole Bajima, he is a 38.6% shooter from three. Probably the guy that I would be the most aware of. He averages 10.5 a game, 5 rebounds. They are missing their starting center, who tore his ACL, Frank Kepnang. He's out for the year. So in there, they have another – I mean, they have another center that is 7'1", 250 pounds in Braxton Mia, averages about 9-6. And they've got a couple other guys that's averaging about 8-9 a game, P.J. Fuller, Keon Minifield, and Jamal Bay. So they're about 7-8 deep as well, kind of similar to the Trojans. They're another by the way,
tall team, it looks like.
I skipped their KenPom and all that stuff. They are – so we mentioned at the top of this preview that this was potentially not going to be any Q1 games. This is a Q2 game. Washington is 95 overall KenPom. They are 155th adjusted offense, 68 adjusted defense, and their 95th overall ranking is one spot ahead of the Vanderbilt Commodores. So I missed something, but yeah.
They have improved where they were to start the season, at least. They were well over 100 earlier on, and, so broken to the top 100 at least. Again, just like USC, fairly tall and do a good job of blocking shots. 18%, they're just a little bit behind Auburn. They're number 4 in the country there. But it's strangely enough, they don't excel at stopping two-point shooters. They focus on three-point shooters, only 27% from beyond the arc on defense. It's 11th in the country. So kind of a weird 1-2. I'm not really sure what that's about, what kind of style they play to force that.
Jalen Williams, monster game. Calling it now.
Yeah. There should be room for some mid-range shooters here. If Jalen can keep laying that in, it's a little hook shot. Could be a big game.
Yeah. I think realistically for Auburn, I mean, you got two games here. I think realistically, Auburn gets one of these games. You don't want to come home from this 0-2. I think realistically, I mean, if they come 2-0 is great. 2-0 would be a phenomenal week. Realistically, depending on the status of Wendell Sunday, I think that's the one, like I said earlier, that's the one I'm more worried about compared to the Washington game. But it would be nice to get two nice wins on the road against P5 teams before SEC play, because once you come back from this trip, you're in SEC play. So, because you've got Florida December 29th at home. So, it'd be good for perception. It's good. I'm glad Auburn's doing this. I remember when this was kind of announced that I was looking forward to making this trip, and life happens. So I'm not.
Same.
Maybe better, because I think Auburn's lost 3 in a row in games I've attended away from Auburn Arena. So maybe for the best.
We are keeping you out of the Vandy game in February.
Well, I will have already been to a couple games, so I'm going to test that theory before we even get to the Vandy game. But should be an exciting week. We're almost through the non-con. Really hoping that, you know, I know people are kind of down on Auburn a little bit after that Memphis game, but you know, remember, just
we lost to a tournament team. It happens.
Lost a really good team. It's one game. It's not the end of the world.
Like Miami, one of the most veteran teams in the country.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Absolutely. So,
Auburn still 5th in the conference in KenPom, but the SEC has 6 top 25 teams. So,
yeah.
It is what it is. I am not terribly torn up about it. Honestly, I think we've seen them play. I'm going to put my foot in my mouth here, more than likely. I think we've seen them play some of their worst basketball. Not that it can't stay bad, but, I mean, between that Northwestern game, the first half in the Georgia State game, this team is better than they have played so far.
Yeah, no, definitely. The pieces are there. They just haven't been able to mesh them together. And I think you can argue for the last 5 games have been a struggle offensively. The Colgate game was the lone exception in that game. And I don't know if this team will ever be a good 3-point shooting team. I have my doubts, but you know, this team's going to win a lot of games if they play the level of defense that they played.
Yeah. Only again, one team has scored more than 66 points, and it was Memphis.
Yeah. Again,
that will win you almost every game.
Yeah. You have Auburn has to figure out a way to rebound the basketball better.
Yeah. And if you're not going to be a great shooting team, got to rebound better.
Exactly.
Simple as that.
Very, very much. So.
All right. Any closing thoughts here, Will? I think we've kind of talked all around this basketball team tonight.
No, this was fun. I enjoyed it.
Let you empty the notebook a little bit.
Yeah, no, this was I enjoyed doing this. It was nice putting some show notes together and kind of doing a deep dive on this and looking forward to these two games and then getting ready for SEC play because it's less than 2 weeks away at this point. So, yeah, that's where I'm at. So I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Of course. This is we're getting into the fun time of year. We're all going to go home, enjoy Christmas, and then we're going to be ready to go. It'll be conference time.